You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome along to the season finale of season 8 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. As ever, we're brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. My name is Kieran Burke and I'm delighted to be joined as ever by Gary Riley, who we'll hear from in a second. But as I said, we're brought to you by Quinn AV and talk about the podcast effect, Gary Riley. Our guest last week, Andrew Quinn from Drogheda, scoring the opening goal of the cup final as Drogheda United ran out winners against Derry City on Sunday in front of over 38,000 at the Aviva Stadium, a new record for a non-Dublin cup final. A great day out as ever, Gary.
Yeah, it was great. Really enjoyed the day. It was no issues, no shite, just a great day out. Decent game in one sense. I was pulling for Drogheda, so great to see that, and good to see the pot effect coming through again. Andy Quinn opening the scoring, so and set them on their way. But great result for Derry. I was Drogheda even. I was absolutely made up that they got the winner or got the winning of the final. Great to see it. So hopefully, I hope they do it again on Saturday as well. It'll be just round off a great ending to the season for them.
Yeah, it's unusual for us to be doing our season finale, and yet there's still another game to go in this season. The playoff final between Drogheda and Braham, we'll be talking about that on the show. But aside from talking about Sunday's cup final, which we're going to do in depth, obviously, we're also going to chat to the Drogheda United chairperson, Joanna Byrne, to reflect on Sunday's success and what it means for the club going forward. It obviously means European football, which is going to have a huge impact on Drogheda, but there's lots to talk about with Joanna. We're going to give our teams of the season as well for both the Premier Division and the First Division, our players of the year, and we've also got a final hotline of the season, and we'll have a bit of a chat about, I suppose, how each team has got on this season as well, and maybe a bit of a look ahead to 2025. So lots to get through on our final pod of the season. It's great you can be with us. We've had such a brilliant year on the podcast, and I suppose we'll reflect on the pod at the end of the show as well. But let's just go straight into the cup final, Gary, and I wanted to, first of all, let's focus solely on Drogheda for a good couple of minutes, because even though last week on the show we reflected on Shells as much as possible, I did feel at times we didn't give them enough credit, and we were talking about where other teams slipped up, and particularly Derry. And I know we're going to be talking about Derry quite a bit again tonight, so I just want to make sure we give Drogheda a good few minutes here, because you said there that it was a good game. I wouldn't necessarily. It wasn't a classic cup.
It wasn't a classic. No,
one team turned up and knew what they had to do. They had a game plan, and Derry played the same game that they've played all year, and it came back to bite them. But Drogheda were so up for it. It really came. Football is a very, very simple game. Sometimes it comes down to who wants it more on the day, and there was only one team that wanted it on the day, and that was Drogheda.
Completely. They were everything you wanted in a team that was classed as the underdog. They, as you said, they showed up. Mm. And that was everybody from Luke Dennison in goal to Piero up front. Everybody did what they were told to do, it would appear. I know there was a lot of talk about Kevin Dara's game plan, but it was executed to the letter, from what certainly I saw. The desire, the heart, the bodies on the line, what you need to be doing in a cup final, they did. Yeah. And, you know, even though Derry had a difficult season, to say the least, Drogheda understood that and put their own stamp on the game.
Yeah. I think even straight from the kickoff, I thought the first couple of minutes, they started with a really good aggression. They had the first kind of half chance where there's a ball played in to Perreault, and I'm not sure whether he got a touch on it or whether it just the pass.
Conley got back to him, wasn't it?
Yeah, but yeah. They were the first ones to get a ball into the opposition box, and for the first 4 or 5 minutes, you know, they were playing on the front foot, and then Derry got control of the ball as we expected. But they started fairly aggressively, and they continued with that aggression throughout the game. Even when they didn't have the ball, there was an aggression about Drogheda. The amount of tackles they won on the day was absolutely sensational. I know there's been a lot of talk about the game plan, about how they managed to keep Michael Duffy quiet, but like, Huey was just absolutely sensational.
Unbelievable. I was just on him.
Yeah, go on.
I was sitting, good listener to Pod Maxi. We seen him on Saturday over in London as well, but we couldn't get over how good he was. And as soon as it was announced in the stadium that he was man of the match, whoever picked that, probably on RT or whoever it was, what a great decision. Probably one of the best man of the match picks of any game this season. We were there, just, I was like, yeah, what a great decision.
Well, the fact that I could argue that, the fact that I could argue that and give you a list of other names, it links in what we spoke about last week. And I know I'm contradicting myself here in moving away from praising Drogheda and maybe going to criticise Derry in a minute. But we spoke last week about why Shelburne won the league and the likes of Derry and Rovers didn't. And we said about how many players in that Shells team played beyond their personal bests,
yeah,
all season long. And we spoke about a number of players and how Derry and Rovers, there was players that didn't hit the heights of previous seasons. Look at that Drogheda team on Sunday. A hooey, absolutely sensational. Dave Webster and Ryan Brennan, the two old in the team, they were crippled at the end. But you spoke about it, and our friend Fitzy, another lad we're going to reference here, he always speaks about the Neil Warnock videos. You got to die for the 3 points. Well, they died for the win on Sunday, those two lads in particular. Markey, everyone thinks about him as this silky player on the ball. The amount of ground he traveled, the amount of ground he covered on Sunday. And he was good on the ball when he had it, but the amount of ground and work he got through, the amount of tackles he made, Farrell was exactly the same. So many players in that Drogheda team turned up on Sunday.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. It's actually incredible. And it shows like the belief that they have in the management team and what they're doing, but also the belief they have in each other. Like, if you're looking around, I would say it would be difficult for like some players to go, well, that fella isn't into it as much as I am.
Yeah.
I'm not going to die for him. He's not dying for me. I'm not dying for him. It seemed to be like everybody on the Drogheda 11 and bench were like, we're all in this together.
Well, the bench had a great impact. I think a Foley in particular came on and made himself really, really busy.
Yeah, stretched it out.
And you look at the subs that come on for Derry, little to no impact. I seen Colin Whelan coming on. I was thinking, oh, here we go now. They could be cooking here. Patrick Hooban comes on. The two lads barely touched the ball.
Yeah, no. Well, I thought Whelan had a bit more of an impact, but not enough. Like he's hasn't had obviously much football this season. But yeah, I think he does have that ability to even come on in this situation and do something with it. But I think it was just too little, too late. Comparing the belief and the, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like the teammateship of Drogheda that was totally non-existent in the Derry side on Sunday. But yeah, like you cover, even like we'll say Luke Dennison, I know there was an article by Neil O'Riordan about his season or leading up to the final. Like he's had not a difficult time, but like not like for a keeper, do you know what I mean? Like if you don't get a number one shirt, you're probably going to be sitting on the bench for 40 games of a season.
Another lad Bowes didn't use and has gone elsewhere and won a medal.
Won a medal, absolutely. Well, I think everybody leaves Bowes when they want to win something. But like there was, you know, he's played what, like maybe 20 games this season, 15 games, 20 games, whatever it was since he left Bowes in the summer. And he's probably gathered him up a heap of points in the league. Not a hit, but like definitely contributed to it, probably picked up one or two by himself. And then didn't have much to do, but he had a couple of scares earlier on in the first half. There was a couple of shots and he did very well to make a couple of good saves. But that Diallo shot, I know he was clobbered just as he was taking the shot. I didn't feel like Diallo was going to score. It. Do you know what I mean? Like I thought, just it's Drogheda's day. And that was even before a goal was scored, if you know what I mean. Like, it was just like, this is going to happen for Drogheda. Derry didn't seem like they had the ability to put the ball in the back of the net.
They never got off the bus. That is the honest truth. They never got off the bus. Even the penalty. There's argument over whether it was inside the box or outside the box, but it was Boyce, wasn't it, to get away the penalty?
Yeah.
It was stolen laziness.
Yeah. Lazy arm, or lazy leg, yeah.
Conor Keane had no right to get into that position from where he was.
No, he didn't, no.
It was just, I want it more, and I'm going through everyone here. And the Derry man just throws out, watches him go by and then throws out a lazy leg. It was just...
But Kane, so like Kane didn't even need to want it that much. He just wanted it a bit, and that was enough to get by anybody in front of him. I think that's the it's not that Drogheda were good, fully deserving of their win and all the rest of it, but it wasn't that they had to be out of their minds, or massively beyond what they're already capable of.
I'd nearly even suggest. I think they nearly played better in the league game. They beat them in Weavers Park a couple of months ago. I think that was actually nearly a better performance. But just tactically, organisationally, and above all else, work rate and desire, they were absolutely sensational on the day in all those departments. And I predicted on the pod last week that they were going to win the cup, and I said that I fancied them to score a set piece goal, and that. Obviously, they are good at set pieces. The game they won 7-0 against Sligo, that I was at, I think 4 or 5 of the goals that night were set pieces. So they're good from set pieces, but a large reason I felt they'd score a goal from a set piece, it's just because Derry are soft. And they were soft on the day, but it has to be said, the delivery from Shane Farrell for the goal, absolutely sensational. And it reminded me a bit of, was it Mulroney that put in the goal last year? I know it didn't go down as a Redmond goal in the end. I think it was an own goal in the cup final for
Pat, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Very similar, great quality cross from Pats last year, and it was very similar from Farrell on Sunday, but it was actually an even better, it was a sensational finish from Quinn, our podcast guest, just side foots it in as if he's been a centre forward his entire life.
Yeah, but what's interesting, if you look back at that, the person that was supposed to mark him was Mark Connolly, and he wasn't next or near him.
He had a poor game on Sunday.
Yeah, he was rubbish. But like you might have expected that from, let's say, your centre forward type of, you know, defending. Losing the runner.
Yeah.
Goes up, doesn't know where the attacker is, loses track of him, doesn't follow the ball either. So he just ends up completely out of the game. But from your star centre back, to be that far away from it, and it was a brilliant ball, but like it could have been probably a good bit better of a ball. Like it didn't have to be that good. And I think that's the, as good as Drogheda were, they didn't have to be that good.
Yeah.
At the same time. I know that's probably a contradiction. But like, where you have your star centre back, who's been in a few teams of the season for some reason, I just, it was just such a poor bit of defending. Really summed up his season, I think, for Derry. Just not good enough, and not good enough in the key moments. But I think
really the cup final on Sunday played out exactly as I had predicted on the pod the week before, and I had in my mind going up to the Aviva on Sunday. I suggested last week, like, because as you'll know and our listeners will know, I was with Derry the whole way to win the cup. I never thought they'd win the league, but I thought they'd win the cup all season long. But then leading up to this final, I totally changed my prediction. I went Drogheda in the final. I looked at that Derry team when they were beaten by Shells the week before in the league. And I know the league was already gone for them, but they were still playing for a place in Europe, which they've totally missed out on now.
Yeah.
But the end of that game, I just looked at them and they were just shattered men. They checked out, they were gone, mentally checked out and gone. And that carried into the cup final on Sunday because they never left, they never got off the bus. They were not on that pitch Sunday. And I know there's been a lot of talk in the media. I think it was the Garrett McGlynn on RT and James McLean today in the press speaking about the attitude of the Derry players. And I would agree with that. The attitude hasn't been there, whether they've just taken too many hammer blows now and the spirit's been knocked out of them. I think that's probably more so the case than actual any suggestion of, you know, they don't care.
Down on tools or anything like that.
Yeah. But at the same time, we hear the cliche all the time when you speak to players and managers during the year. It's always the group, you know, it's a great group of lads, great dressing room. All the gaffer is great and the lads are great. So I wouldn't be entirely comfortable with what appears to be happening is there's like a complete, it's all the players' fault. Now, they play a large part in it. They step over the white line. They haven't performed. But tactically,
like, non-existent.
It's a combination. The tactics haven't been right all season. The style of play hasn't been right all season. And obviously, the players themselves haven't had, have they had the freedom to say when they're on the pitch and they can see themselves like, this isn't working, have they got that freedom to go and try and change a game? Or are they just not doing that? Did they not have the mental strength to say, right, we need to go and grab this game by the scruff of the neck? I don't know, but just as a collective it hasn't worked this season for Derry. It's been a disastrous season.
Yeah, it has been. But like, just on that last exact point there, right, where you said that, like, do they have the autonomy to go and do something? Can you tell me who is the person on the Derry team that's going to lead that? Who, like, let's say if I'm, I don't know, who'd you say was it, Boyce that gave away that penalty there on Sunday?
Yeah.
Right, I'm Boyce, I'm after making a mistake like that. Who am I going to look to on the 10 other players on the pitch to go, oh, what's he going to say to me to make this okay and how we're going to get out of this? There isn't one player I'd look to. I'd be looking up into the stand, looking for the old boy or something like that to go. Not that he'd give me much help, but like, I don't know, I'd be looking somewhere else. I wouldn't be looking elsewhere on the pitch. I wouldn't be looking over at the sideline to go, this is where I'm going to get my answer. This is going to help me through the next few minutes of the game to get me out of this. Oh shit, I'm after causing us a goal here. How are we going to rectify this with the half an hour left that we have in the game? There isn't one player on that pitch that you can go, oh yeah, he's going to help me out of this. But if that was Drogheda, let's say for example Andrew Quinn gave away a penalty and Derry scored, I'd be looking over at Ryan Brennan, Dave Webster, Deegan on the sideline, even Dara Markey, like players who have been doing it regularly for the club. There hasn't been enough performers throughout the entirety of Derry season, and you know, like. And not only that, there has been, you know, generational levels of head loss up in the Derry camp in recent times. Like, it's bizarre, some of the stuff, like, and I think, I don't know how that is rectified going forward. Like, is it going to be like, right, we need to get rid of 8 lads out of this squad, we need a complete refresh? Does that mean Higgins has to go on the background staff? Go on.
It looks like there's going to be kind of a refresh by default here, because apparently, but if you read any of the reports, it looks like that maybe as many as 5 of those players could be gone in the next few weeks. So,
and from what I'm hearing, like Higgins will be staying on. So if that's the case, then if Higgins stays on, he has a big job to get the fans back on side because of this season. Whether he likes to hear that or not, I don't really care. He should know that himself, actually.
And I don't think he helped his cause Sunday as well and the players too didn't help their cause. They hid from their fans. Let's call a spade a spade.
There wasn't very many fans left, but
to be fair, there was enough there. You go over, you take your medicine. They didn't do that, the vast majority of them. And I thought that was extremely poor, and it didn't go unnoticed by the Derry faithful either.
No, I didn't. No, I noticed it myself. But to be honest with you, at the time, I didn't really give 2 shits. I was just delighted for Drogheda, and I was enjoying that celebration. So I didn't really care what was going on with Derry, to be quite honest.
No, but it is a good point you make about, like, and we've got questions in the hotline. Where do they go from here? Is there going to be a refresh? Does the manager stay on? Obviously, the manager has lost the fan base, and anyone.
Yeah, but the fan base is recoverable.
Is it, like, though?
Absolutely.
He's going to have to go and win 10 games on the spin at the start of next season. We've seen this situation before with managers in the league, and we've spoken about it. This is now hanging over him going into next season.
Yeah,
he can win the first 3 or 4
Nancy,
games.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
He can win the first 3 or 4, 5, 6 games next season. Next thing, you lose to, I don't know who.
Hearts in the cup, first
round of the cup or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And next thing, you draw your next game and you lose your next and you're gone. It's unrecoverable. So that's going to be hanging over him next season.
Well, one thing I would say to that is that there needs to be, and I said it last week, and this is said back to me in the meantime, there needs to be a football transplant here.
Hmm.
Right? Like, what we've been doing, no bueno, does not work. We have to stop it. So we need to reevaluate what we're doing and come up with a new tactical approach to as their ethos for games. Because if they don't do that, if they keep putting out that shite, and like the fans, like so many fans that even, like, I'd say blathering away talking to Derry fans on Sunday, they're tired of the football.
Yeah.
They're tired, bored out of their minds. I saw one, this was a few weeks ago, I saw online some like people going to it as a like, to chat amongst each other, meet people, you know, and that's what it should, like, it's a social outlet, obviously. But, like, you want to be entertained as well. No one pays £20 into a game.
This is the point I was trying to make earlier, but a lot of the commentary that, you know, it's all on the players here.
No, it's not.
Rory Higgins didn't inherit this squad. He built this squad.
Yeah.
And for me, the makeup has been wrong. And maybe we've been slow to the uptake of that because you look at the names on paper and you think of lads and what they've won elsewhere, a lot of them ex-Dundalk boys in particular.
Mm.
I think the squad was too old. I think there was a lack of freshness about this Derry squad over the last while. And I think the makeup was wrong. I think.
You think, is there like a lack of hunger there among, we'll say, the cohort of, we'll say, elder players that have won a lot before?
I don't know, because he did try to bring back Derry lads too. Yeah, and that was obviously popular with the fans at the time. Now, there's been
wrong.
There's been a criticism too that there's too many Derry lads that have been let go then from within the club, and the academy seems to be a bit kind of ad hoc up there at the minute. I don't know. But there's like Michael Duffy and McElhenney, it's their local club. Can you tell me there's a lack of hunger from them? I don't know what I believe that. I just think as a group, the formula there, the balance isn't right. And if he's going to get another chance at it next season, Rory Higgins, and he came out fighting, to be fair, after the game with his post-match comments, he wants to give it another go, then this is going to be his one and only chance to come up with a new formula. Because as you said, the plan up there for the last two years, it's been wrong. It hasn't worked.
No, it hasn't worked. But I think there has to be a bit of, okay, this approach hasn't worked. We've given it a good go. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd say there has been time given for this and players have been brought in. As you mentioned last week, Pat Hooban was brought in.
Yeah.
It's not as if, like, you know, like an underage player from Longford Town was brought in to be the leading strikers for Derry this season. Pat Hooban was brought in.
Yeah.
He's still the top scorer in the league. But they still didn't win enough games. They still drew a lot of games. They just weren't next or near it. So, like, I think there does have to be a bit of like a change in the personnel. There's no question about that. But if it doesn't come hand in hand with how they play and approach games and the formula, as you said, the tactics, it's just going to be forgotten about. And like, you're going to start seeing a lot of the stuff that we saw with other clubs, like, we'll say, with Devine, at Bowes, maybe Clancy as well, coming to the end of his time at Pats.
Daily
as well. Like, the fans just don't care. They just don't want to see it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a case of, like, where it's a toxic situation. Like, there was booing going on there at halftime and at full time from the Derry fans. And I don't blame them. But, like, if I was a Derry fan, I would be very apprehensive of buying my season ticket to go back to watch that dross.
Yeah.
I watched a lot this season. I know they had a good, like, and I was dug out for it earlier on this season where they had actually a very good home record, but no one's been entertained.
No.
And that's part and parcel of it. And just the last thing about that, the lack of atmosphere for the Shelburne game. I know the season was over and all that, but you had a good chance to get into Europe and stop the team that has done you out of even finishing second. And they didn't show up for that either. And the fans kind of reflected that. So, yeah, tough old season. But definitely, like, some of the head loss needs to be rectified as well. Get the head down, concentrate on your own stuff, get it sorted.
Yeah. Well, look, let's turn it back to the victors, Drogheda United. I would say the celebrations continue, but I think they've been sensible enough given the week that's in it now again with the playoff game coming up. They obviously had their bit of a homecoming after the game Sunday. I'm not sure whether celebrations continued into Monday or not.
But like, you definitely don't want to spoil your FAI Cup win relegated. So yeah,
the momentum here that they've got is absolutely unbelievable. So they just need to get it over the line now. We will preview that playoff final in a couple of moments' time. But before we do that, we are going to speak to the Drogheda United chairperson, Joanna Byrne. She joins us on Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, I am delighted to say we are joined on Between the Stripes LOI podcast by Drogheda United chairperson, that is Joanna Byrne. Joanna, congratulations on the cup win at the weekend. You must be still on an almighty high.
Thanks, Ciarán. Yeah, look, I don't even think it's actually sunk in at this stage. It's been a roller coaster of emotions over the last couple of weeks, let alone the last couple of days. But look, it's obviously brilliant. It's a monumental achievement for not just for the club, but for the town and city of Drogheda. And, you know, to see the support we got from nearly 20,000 Drogheda fans that travelled to the Aviva, that came home with us to our homecoming in Scotch Hall on Sunday night, that celebrated throughout the town all day yesterday. I don't think there was a tap of work done anywhere yesterday. The support has just been, you know, incredible, from our ultras to our wider fan base, to all the schools that welcomed us over the last couple of weeks, the businesses and the organisations that rallied behind us. Just been phenomenal, to be honest, which I don't even know where to start to take it all in at this stage.
Obviously, I dropped you a text yesterday to see if we could get you on the show for a chat. I see you already have the WhatsApp profile picture changed to you and the cup on the pitch the other day. That must be a moment that'll live with you forever.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, I'm following Drogheda for as long as I can remember. I grew up around the club with my granddad as a chairperson. And, you know, I volunteered for this club all my life, like many other people have done, might I add. It's a club that's been built by volunteers, that's maintained by volunteers even to this day. And we've so many incredible volunteers behind the scenes. So, yes, it's a really, really special moment for me. It's something that will be very hard to ever be topped, but it's just as special to everybody that's behind me, that's beside me every step of the way through it.
And only draw the second ever FAI Cup win goes to show that these sort of things don't come around too often for so many clubs. But the big prize that obviously comes with winning the FAI Cup is European football next season. Obviously, we all have memories of Drogheda in Europe and Dynamo Kiev and the width of the post and all the rest. But for Drogheda to be back on that stage, how important is that going to be for the football club?
Look, it's the one thing that every club nearly strives for throughout the year. And if any of us are being honest in Drogheda, it's not somewhere we thought we would be this season, to be perfectly honest, which is we haven't thought that far ahead. But of course, it's special. It's a huge achievement. It puts Drogheda United on the map again. It puts Drogheda as a town and city on the map again. And it really reflects the club, the town and everybody that's involved in the club in a really, really positive light on a worldwide scale. So it's huge and it's very, very special to me. Like, my grandfather, Mick Byrne, was the first chairman to ever bring Drogheda to Europe back in 1983, before I was even born. So for me as a chairperson to be taking us back to Europe, it's just unbelievable. It's an achievement I never thought that I'd be sitting here having a conversation about. And yeah, look, you know, on a personal level, them European trips were some of the best holidays I've ever had. I made great friends, great comrades and people that I built relationships with over them trips that are still close friends to this day. And that's what comes with League of Ireland football. It's not all about the football. It's about the relationships that you can build. It's the camaraderie, you know, that you have even with other clubs, but amongst your own. And there's so many special things that come out of it, as well as the memories, the life experiences, and for the team themselves and for Kevin and Dara. Like, I couldn't be happier for them. They work so hard morning, noon and night, and a lot of it is done additional to, you know, personal commitments in their lives. A lot of them are married, some of them have kids, you know, some of them are coming from other jobs, and none of it is easy. I know it's not easy to be an athlete in any way, shape or form, but, you know, none of it is easy, and the determination and the grit that they shown on Sunday, they really, really deserve this, and I couldn't be prouder of them. I really couldn't.
And you mentioned your grandfather there was the first chairman to lead Drogheda into Europe. It's amazing how things come full circle in football. Next season, you'll be the first ever woman to lead a club into European competition. Yeah. That must be something you're immensely proud of.
It is indeed. Like, and it's not something I've ever taken for granted. To be the first female chairperson in the League of Ireland has been a tremendous honour to me. And to be the first female chairperson to lift an FAI Cup, it's just, you know, it's crazy. They're all huge achievements, but it's just, it's testament to the club and their belief in women, you know, and they're very, we've always been very of the mindset to empower women and bring women with us. And for me, you know, in everything I do, I try and break down barriers every day in my own professional life within the club. And to be able to be that woman that's paving that way forward for other women who are involved and other women who give it their all and are sometimes left behind, it's a huge honour.
You mentioned earlier as well, you said you didn't really expect to be in this position going into next year where you're going to have to be preparing for a European campaign. Will that bring challenges to the club as well as the obvious benefits?
Oh, of course it will. Like the logistics of a European run for any club brings its challenges, but it's something we've done before. It's something we'll do again. And as I mentioned earlier on, we've a huge team behind the scenes in Drogheda United, and I've no doubt we'll do it successfully. But no, look, nobody's sitting at the start of the season and Drogheda going, we're going to win the league or we're going to win the cup. You know, we were just focused on doing our best, turning the best side of us out at every opportunity. And you know, we didn't do that as much as we could early in the season. We met some challenges in the first half of the season, and you know, we were probably in a bit of a slump, which thankfully turned around after the summer transfer window. And since that, I think the team was solidified by the additions, the additional signings, and it really just brought out, you know, the greatness that was probably already there. It just enhanced it, brought everything together. And, you know, we did take a turnaround, but we were still unfortunate in some results. You know, our energy levels might not have been as strong as some people's. I mean, we were losing silly goals towards the end of matches there for a period. And, you know, no, it's not. I don't think at any stage anybody kind of was sitting going, we're going to Europe, we're going to win the cup. We were just focused on turning our best side out at every opportunity. And that's something we always strive to do.
I'm glad you brought up the slump that Drogheda suffered, I suppose, before the summer break, because I was in Oriel the night that you were beaten 4-2, and I felt leaving that game, oh, is there a swing on here between the two loud clubs? And it felt like the momentum might be with Dundalk, but you mentioned it there, the summer signings that were made were so, so important to Drogheda's upturn in form in the second half of the season. And I suppose it speaks to maybe the way the club is run. There seems to be a very patient approach to things at Drogheda. Like, there was no sign of anyone been trigger happy there where you were in the summer. And also the new owners came in last year and we had you on to speak about that at the time. And I think a lot of people, they seen new owners coming in, and particularly owners that are involved with a club in England, and they were thinking, oh, here comes loads of big money signings now and the cash is going to be slashed. But it's all been very patient and kind of measured from Drogheda, and it seems to have come to fruition now.
Yeah, well, look, you know, that's football for you. A week is a long time in football, and things can turn around fairly quickly. And probably that night in Dundalk, we all left deflated and kind of went, oh, what's the future bringing? You know, and Kevin has mentioned that in his speeches over the last couple of days. Like, they heard the fans that night. We heard the fans that night, and probably was a turning point in our mindsets. And, you know, I feel for Dundalk. They've went on and they've had their struggles late in the season, and no club wants to be in that position, and no club wants to see another club in that position. We were just fortunate that the stars aligned for us. Our signings were right. And thankfully, we've come out strong enough on the cup run. We still have Saturday to get through to know our own fate. It's to where we stand, hopefully still in the Premier Division after our playoff against Bray. But in regards to the owners, they're brilliant guys. Like I said, that from day one. Everything is very measured, as you say, very prudent, and it's always been a long-term sustainable plan. And their approach to everything is to be steady, you know, steady growth, steady the ship initially, and steady growth that is sustainable. And there's been no throwing the cash at it. Everything has been thought out. It's been calculated. It's been careful, and just to make sure that the club can sustain that long term. And we're in a very, very positive place. The momentum around the club, on the field, off the field, behind the scenes, everything is exceptionally positive, and we're just in a very great place. We really are.
You're right, though. A week is a very long time in football, and that momentum, a lot of it could be lost depending on what happens on Saturday in the playoff. How important is that game for Drogheda? Because we've obviously been speaking to, I suppose, chairman at First Division clubs recently, and there's a little bit of concern about maybe the gulf that's starting to appear between the two divisions financially, and there's the ongoing issue with the solidarity payments and all the rest. So it seems like it's never been more important than ever to be in the Premier Division, and that's where you hope you'll still be on Saturday night.
Yeah, look, you know, and particularly in the light of our neighbours in Dundalk, nobody wants to see two loud clubs in the first division. And my fear would be, if I'm being honest with you, if there's two loud clubs in the first division, there's only one of us getting out of it next year, you know. And I think it serves Dundalk better as well, to be honest with you. If we're in the Premier Division, it gives them that little bit of space, because that rivalry between both clubs is very important. We're the smallest county in the country, but we've a long standing tradition of having two Premier Division football clubs.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, from that aspect of it as well, I think it's crucially important that we maintain Premier Division status. But from a personal perspective, and for the fans have given so much to us this season. Like, they support, I'm sure every club says it, but I really do believe, like, our fan base is just up there with the best of them in the country, if not the best of them. And, you know, they really drive us all forward. They motivate me, being honest with you. I hear them, I see them, and I see every kid in the town walking around in a draw the jersey again. And that really inspires us to keep building and keep trying to better anything and everything we can. And, you know, for them, they deserve it. But for the team and for Kevin, like, nobody wants to be going to the first division, but I've no doubt they'll go out on Saturday and they'll give it their all. And we just need to see what that brings, you know.
You mentioned the rivalry there, and look, I can tell from speaking to you there, you don't take any joy in what's happened to Dundalk. No. But you must have enjoyed waking up yesterday morning to see the Drogheda flag been flown at the council buildings in Dundalk.
I did. It didn't last too long, mind you. And now, look, you know, as I said to you, Louth is a proud tradition, but Louth County Council have also recognised that there's two very strong football clubs in this county. And it was nice to see. Like, I sent a picture of it before it was sent out in the socials and stuff like that. And it was very camaraderie to see. I've sat on Louth County Council for many years when Dundalk were having their glory days. And I've had to sit in chambers where everybody in the room was congratulating Dundalk Football Club and waiting to see if I would or I wouldn't, you know, that kind of way. So it's nice to see the tables have turned slightly to some extent. But no, I take no joy in what's happening in Dundalk. And we've built a great working relationship with a lot of the officials in Dundalk, particularly in recent months. Probably coming out of rivalry between the fans has probably brought the structures of the two clubs closer together. And that's something I'm very focused on, is building that relationship between the two clubs. So, no, I take no personal pleasure in it. Of course, I'm a Drogheda fan, but, you know, I think it's healthy for the game. It's healthy for the derby matches. It's healthy for both clubs to have that. You know, that them ongoing games, that rivalry, that passion. I think it's what breeds both clubs, if I'm being honest with you. Like, it really does.
And look, I was at the Aviva on Sunday, and the Drogheda support, I know Derry brought a huge crowd as well, but Drogheda, for a town like Drogheda to bring 20,000 supporters up there was absolutely unbelievable. And I've been over to Weavers Park lots of times over the last couple of years, and the atmosphere there is always absolutely incredible. I know you were disappointed to miss out on the funding for the stadium recently, but from listening to you speaking to the media after that, you seem to be quite positive that things are in a good place and that you're going in the right direction with that type of thing.
Yeah, look, obviously it was very disappointing, and I was very deflated last Monday. I'm not going to lie to you, but we had the FAI Cup media day the following day and the Tuesday, and I purposely didn't let that announcement overshadow that day, because for me, that day and that event was about the team, and yeah, it was about the FAI Cup, and it was about harnessing the support and motivating people to come out. And I made a conscious decision, and the club, all of us agreed that we weren't going to let any negativity overshadow that day. And I probably kept it more positive than I was feeling, if I'm being honest with you. But look, we met with Minister Byrne last Tuesday morning before that, and I actually had a great conversation with him at the match on Sunday. He was there. You know, and it's clear that the funding will come. We jumped too quick because the opening of the funding came up, and it was an opportunity we couldn't miss. But yeah, look, there's things within our control that we can move on. We have to finalise the land deal with Louth County Council. We're working on that at the moment. That'll take a bit of time. We obviously have to go to planning. We've done a bit of work on that. We had to do some work on that initially to include in the grant application, but we still need to move through that process. That takes time. So in the interim, we will focus on what's within our control, I think, is the best way to do it. And you know, then the onus is on government then, when the next opportunity arises, when we're in a place to move, that they need to come in behind us and back us. And the minister has assured me that funding will come.
I suppose my final question, everyone's talking now about the momentum for Drogheda, what Sunday has given you momentum-wise, and hopefully you can stay in the Premier Division now this weekend. given the situation with Weavers Park, we know it's not in the best nick. What can you do to build on that momentum? Because there's huge interest now in the club going forward. You're going to be in Europe next season, hopefully still in the Premier Division. How do you harness that momentum now, despite the fact that you have got facilities that are a challenge?
Well, look, that has been the big headache and the big challenge for the club and for me since I took over as chair, probably in the last 2 years. Our attendance figures have boosted. I think we're the highest percentage of attendance increases throughout the league and have been consistently for the last 2 to 3 years. I know every week, that start of the week, that the upcoming match on the Friday night is going to sell out. They're selling out in advance. I know I'm disappointing people. My phone blows up, particularly in the big matches, semi-finals, the Dundalk match, any of that kind of stuff. My phone blows up, and I actually had to put a status up on the semi-final week on my Facebook. Sold out means sold out. Please don't make either of us feel awkward by asking me for tickets. I haven't got them, you know. And I was just in an awful position because there's people I know personally, there's people I know invested time and money to the club, and I was having to say no. You know, we can't increase our capacity. So that is the biggest challenge we have. We are reviewing at the moment if there's areas we can put in additional seats. Will that increase capacity? It may not, to be honest with you, because the structures of seats and the steel and everything that come with them, you'd probably fit more people standing. It's a headache, you know. But and that was the whole reason that we pushed as hard as we did, and we invested so much time and money, if I'm being honest with you, into the application for the Large Scale Sports Infrastructure Fund. The facilities are crucial to us going forward. They're crucial to evolving our academy, to evolving our women's teams, you know, to be able to give our first team and everybody who wears a jersey for our club the facilities they deserve. So look, it's a challenge, but as I said, we can only control what's in our control. And as a club, we'll just do what we can over the off season, you know, in conjunction with the FAI and their facilities team as to what we can do to better the experience for those who are attending Weavers Park, but to open the doors to as many more as we can possibly. Europe is going to be a thing, but potentially I don't think we'd be playing European games in United or Weavers Park anyway. So that may relieve some of that pressure from us initially. But for licensing and everything else, our day-to-day stuff, you know, there's improvements that we do need to make. And we have done some of them throughout the year. You've probably seen the new concreted areas at a couple of sections throughout the cross lanes end that we are in the process of putting in additional seats. But we'll have to sit down and review all that once we get Saturday out of the way and the season comes to the end. The planning will go into all that kind of stuff then.
I suppose it's a nice problem to have in some ways, that you're trying to create space to get more people in. It's not something that we would have been talking about a couple of years ago. So that is a positive. Just actually one more question before I let you go. We were speaking earlier about the patient approach, I suppose, of the new owners since they've come in. Will the fact that you're in Europe next season, and again, hopefully in the Premier Division, will you maybe have to accelerate? I know there's probably been the expectation that in the next couple of years you will go full time as a club. Is that something you might have to accelerate now?
Well, look, the majority of our team are full time. I think 14 of our first team players are actually full time footballers. So there's kind of a hybrid model going on there at the moment. And those who aren't are those who had career commitments prior to us coming into this transition period. You know, we'll need to look at that when we're negotiating contracts in the off season. But I think a natural progression to full time is probably more prudent rather than making a cutthroat. We're going full time, and if you can't commit to full time, we're not considering you as a player. Like if you look at Gary Deegan, Dara Markey, some of our best players in recent years would never have been able to go to full time due to their work commitments. And who wants to make that decision? Because Dara Markey in particular has had another belter of a season for us, and he was crucial to everything we've achieved. So I think, you know, if you look at 14 out of, 24, 26 players are already full time. I think we'll just probably, for this year anyway, continue with that natural progression into full time. And obviously the aim is to bring everybody on board, but I don't think we'll be taking a harsh cut off to the likes of the Dara Markeys and them who can make a contribution, that they will have to go full time, not just yet anyway. And that comes back to facilities as well. We have to be able to offer full time facilities to a full time team.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Joanna, thanks so much. And once again, a massive congratulations.
Thanks, Ciarán. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, huge thanks to Joanna for joining us on the show. The question is, Gary, will Drogheda United still be a Premier Division club by the time we return with the podcast next season? Bray against Drogheda on Saturday. Unfortunately, it's just the way it's fallen, isn't it? It's unfortunate that it's clashing with an Ireland-England weekend in the internationals. We'll obviously be in Wembley. I think I'll be flying or landing in around the time this is kicking off. So I don't know what I see a whole pile of this, to be honest. But for the two clubs involved, this is absolutely massive.
I was already on to Michael O'Leary. He's going to get Wi-Fi on the plane over, so we'll be able. Well, me and Fitzy will be able to watch it. Look, we've been wrong twice about Bray, but I think we're going to be right about them this time. I think Drogheda will have been good this week. We'll have enjoyed the FAI Cup celebrations, but I think their heads will be fairly focused on this weekend to finish off the job and not let themselves down in the last game of the season. I think it's going to be, I wouldn't say comfortable, but I think they will.
The sad fact here is Bray will probably give Drogheda a better game than Derry did on Sunday.
Jesus, imagine if they win.
Yeah, well, it would top off what has been just an amazing season. I mean, Shelburne 25-1 league winners, Drogheda, the team that finished ninth in the Premier Division, winning the FAI Cup. This would just cap off the mother of all greatest league in the world seasons. If Bray
would
playoff final,
yeah, like I think it would be a surprise. I think the story for Drogheda is too good at the minute. The buzz that must be in amongst the squad at the moment must be just sensational. And I think they'll all have enough cop on to be concentrating on the game on Saturday. And as I said, not to let themselves down at the final hurdle.
The only thing is, obviously, I mentioned that there was a couple of very, very sore bodies on Sunday. And someone I just want to mention again, because I haven't mentioned him enough on the pod so far, but Dave Webster. Oh. I mean, his story is remarkable. The injury that he's come back from at his, I won't say age, let's just say the stage of his career.
Yeah.
And to go into Drogheda at the start of this season, everyone said, that makes sense. You know, third, fourth choice, bit of cover, good lad around the dressing room, you know, probably might go and coach him, whatever. But to actually be so heavily involved in this season and to be so solid at the back. And he was sensational on Sunday. For me, he could have easily been named the match, man of the match, but he was obviously very, very sore at the end of it. Ryan Brennan was the same too. So,
well, he had his nearly head knocked off him.
Yeah. Well, no, that was his own doing. But
yeah, I know that. But your head been knocked off, and still your head knocked off, no matter if you did it yourself.
I was just going to say, like, will those lads be available to start on Sunday? I'm not so sure. But you look at the players that come on, I suppose, for Drogheda, Foley, who I mentioned was very effective. Heaney has been excellent for them this season. Gary Deegan is obviously so experienced. They've got players like Aaron McNally, Jack Keeney that could come in there. They should still have enough, you'd think.
Yeah, I do think so. I think, like, it's on one hand, like I would say for Bray, having a couple of weeks off, relax, you know, light training or whatever, and move and, you know, prepare with a good run in for it is wonderful, particularly after, because, like, you know, if they had played that extra time and penalties, and then we'll say the following Friday that had to play that game against Drogheda, that would have been very tough. So it is a benefit on one hand for Bray that Drogheda were just after a cup final. But I think the buzz of it all for Drogheda will see them through. Like I would say it's probably a bit of an evener on the game. Would you agree? The fact that Drogheda just had played the FAI Cup.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think what's probably going to swing it back in the favour of Drogheda, apart from being a Premier Division team, is that they just have too much and will be buzzing from the cup final.
Yeah, and we spoke about it on last week's pod. I think the 2 week break for Bray is not a help to them.
I was thinking about that, and I think it is better. I think that's helpful.
Hmm.
You know, they can sit back and, you know, I don't know, eat the dinner and, you know, chill out and meet for coffee and all that palaver.
One thing's for certain with Doherty and Dardoyle's team, they're not going to take this for granted. They're so disciplined. They're so well organised. It's not going to be a case of, right, lads, we've just won the cup. Let's go out here and roll these boys over and go for pints. It's going to be a case of, we need to be extremely disciplined here. And we need to pick our moments. I don't think that this will be a steamroll job at all. I don't think this will be comfortable. I think this will be nervy viewing for Drogheda fans. I think there's going to be moments where might have to sit in and soak up a lot of pressure. Yeah. And Bray, they have good attacking players, as we know. And I think they might cause Drogheda more problems than Derry did on Sunday, strangely enough. But I think we know Bray are fragile defensively. And you think of the two lads up front, and Perreault came off. I know he's a bit upset that he came off. He probably sealed his own fate by getting that silly yellow card for kicking the ball away. And I think the lads have maybe seen Perreault pick up clumsy cards this season and get sent off and give away penalties and the likes of that. I think they took him off then for Foley. I think that was a good piece of management there. But
yeah,
Perreault, you could tell he wasn't happy when he came off. He'd love to have the final word on this season by scoring the goal that keeps them in the Premier Division. Him and Taylor up there, I think they'll have more than enough to
He certainly would, but like if he was sent off on Sunday, he wouldn't be available for this playoff game.
Yeah, no, it was good management.
So, yeah, it was, absolutely, yeah. And like, he should probably realise that. It's like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that.
But at the same time, I'd say the lads were probably good. They were probably happy to see him kicking off a little bit when he came off. Not that he was going insane.
You want that buzz.
You want a bit of fire in his belly. So
yeah.
Look, he's got that. So look, we're both going for Drogheda wins then, are we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Brad.
Look, depending on how things play out there, we might have a little bit of a mini pod on our members club next week, depending on how things play out there. So keep an eye out for that. But we're going to move on to have a bit of a review of the season, Gary. We're going to have just a quick word on all 20 clubs. We're not going to go in-depth on this because we'll be here for 4 hours. And also, I'm going to be doing club-by-club season reviews for the members club. Now, once the season ends, I'll have all 20 clubs up there. There'll be a report card for all of them, in-depth articles. So again, if you want to be able to access all of that exclusive content during the off-season, then go to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI/membership. And I'm announcing a sale for the end of the season as well. Usually it's 50 quid for the 12-month membership, but I'm cutting that to 20 for the end of the season. So get involved with that.
Black Friday, John.
Friday, exactly. Yeah. So get involved with that while you can, because there's going to be a review for every club going up there. And as I said, we might have some little mini pods during the off season for our members as well. So well worth checking that out. But look, we'll go through them in no particular order, guys. Just give me a quick line on all of these teams. We'll start with Dundalk.
I can start with a handy one. I'd say I was going to go with I think a D minus. The fact that they're still alive is the only thing that was is a success.
Yeah. You don't even need to give me grades on this, because I'll be doing that on the members club.
Oh, fair
quick
enough,
line on them all. I suppose disastrous on the pitch for Dundalk, disastrous off the pitch for them.
One silver lining is they're still there.
Yeah, and there seems to be a bit of positivity surrounding the club. We heard John Temple speaking, obviously, after he named Kilduff as the new manager. We've seen Dervin getting a new deal there. So there does seem to be a bit of positivity, maybe light at the end of the tunnel. I don't know how they've got to that situation, what they've done, but they're obviously working hard behind the scenes. So
yeah,
so that is good to hear. Let's go to your next favourite club, Bose.
Oh, I'd say another poor season. Yeah. Not wholly unexpected. Bit of hope at the start of the season, but that quickly went away. Just a lot of really bad performances, a lot of stupid goals. Their signings haven't been great that they made before in the off season last year, and trying to get the gang back together during the summer didn't really do much for their season either. I suppose the one highlight was knocking out Shamrock Rovers out of the cup, but that was it.
Yeah,
they're shy.
Waterford.
I think promote a team. not too bad. Could it be worse?
Could be a lot worse. Yeah,
it could be.
We spoke about it at times. There seems to be a bit of uneasiness within the fan base at times. There, a lot of talk about Pete Long again, even after the season is over. Like seventh in your first season back in the Premier. I know they lost form towards the end, but Ammon coming back, that was a great story in itself. Joint top scorer in the league. And they lost Asamoah halfway through the season, who I thought was one of the best players in the league at one stage. So
yeah,
I think a perfectly good season. Yes, it's going to maybe be difficult to build on it, but when you've been in the first division for so long, I can't believe that everyone isn't, you know, dancing for joy down there with the season they've had.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a bit of a reality check as to where or what they should be doing in their first season back. I think it was a perfectly fine season. Very competitive division. And they'll be, of course, disappointed with some of the results, as you said, particularly towards the end of it. But you're going to have that as a newly promoted team. I'd be very satisfied with that season down there.
Sligo Rovers, I think a team we've obviously been harsh on at times on the pod, but I think a very, very solid showing from them this season.
Yeah, it kind of went a bit to shit coming to the end of it, but not too bad. I thought they had some really good results, some really good performances. There seems to be a bit of a John Russell renaissance going on. It'll be difficult. Like, I know they've already lost Simon Power as well, so it's going to be difficult next season.
That's one thing that concerns me, because when they played well this season, they were a really enjoyable team to watch. And I think of the game with Brandywell there live on telly recently, where they got the point. They played great stuff that night, really, really good stuff. But you mentioned Power there. I know he didn't play a huge pile this season, but when he played, he was fantastic, and he really added to that team. And now there's talk of Conor Malley as well, possibly moving on. And now I wouldn't have been his biggest fan when he was at Dundalk, but I think he's the type of player, you get good players around him and you'll see a very, very good player there. So you can see why the likes of maybe Shamrock Rovers or Shelburne are keen to put him into their midfield. So Sligo already, we'd be looking for them to build on what they have, and it looks like they're going to lose players. So you'd be worried about
about
next season, about building on this. But for this season, they definitely surprised us and did quite well. What about their Connacht neighbours, Galway?
Yeah, another very good season from a promoted team. Not that they were not a Premier Division outfit last season in all but division. There was obviously that jibber-jabber that they were in for a title shout, but that was never going to be a runner, really. Great return to the division. They can surely build on it next year and see where they go, but very satisfying return, like fifth in the first season back.
Yeah.
What can you say?
Brilliant, yeah. St. Pat's.
Shite at the start, good at the end. as Gattuso kind of says. Really good end of the season. They're a serious contender based on what we've seen in the last few months. What did it go? 9 games in a row, all wins or whatever it was. Just fantastic. Great time for their fans. Stephen Kenny's obviously building something there. To win all of their games, like since what? Probably maybe the summer. It's really the summer. Hold on, no. Yep. Every game since September was a win. So, great end of the season. They'll surely be looking at it going, we could definitely do something next year. And I think I said last week or the week before that a full pre-season for Stephen Kenny will be massive.
And he's already getting business done early, as we've seen with Powell.
Yeah, and I think there'll be other bits of business going on. It'll be interesting to see what type of player he brings in. Like, he's apart from money being no object there, Stephen Kenny being able to pull players in and by himself will be good to see.
Yeah.
So, watch this space.
Shelburne, the champs.
What else do you need to say?
That's it. Shelburne, champions.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Who have we forgotten? Derry, we've already summed it up as disaster. I think that's the only way.
Pure scutter.
They've missed out on Europe altogether. Their own fans. I was walking behind a couple of young Derry fans on the way into the game the other day. Now, they were well sauced and having the crack or whatever, but they were even, you know, shouting out about, we finished fourth in a two-horse race. They were, and this is how I knew that the fans had no confidence going into the game Sunday. They were stopping trot of the fans that were walking by in them saying, congratulations, you're going to win it today, because we can't win nothing. It's just been one of them seasons for them. So Shamrock Rovers, the last team we'll chat about in the Premier Division. Again, I don't think we've covered their European exploits too much on the pod because the title run-in was, you know, was all really, wasn't it? We were just totally focused on that. But I know these are teams you'd expect them to beat, the likes of Laren, the likes of TNS. But to see them 7 points on the board in a European group stage, I know it's not a group stage anymore, but see them with 7 points on the board and in a really, really viable chance of getting knockout football.
Yeah.
It's massive for that club. And I know people will have different opinions on whether it's good for the league or not good for the league, but we could be watching a Rovers team still playing European football post-Christmas, which I think is only a bonus. So look, they'll be disappointed to have missed out on five in a row. They just give up too much ground at the start. They need to be better in the cup, as we've touched on a few times. But I think if they can do something historic in Europe and get through to the knockout stages, then I think they can look back at this season still with a bit of pride.
Absolutely. I think that'll be the great silver lining. Like, obviously knocked out of the cup and, as you said, left too much ground to cover coming up to the end of the season to catch Shells. As we know, it wasn't in their hands on the last day, so that obviously was an issue. So, yeah, look, they'll be able to look back at it. They do have a bit of work to do squad-wise, but, you know, everybody's going on about the wealth of talent, the riches and the this and the blathering. Like, there still needs to be maintenance done in that squad, I think. Mm-hmm. And from what we're hearing, I think they've started some of that already.
Mm. Let's look at the first division. We'll start with Kerry.
Okay. Like, I think it started off with a lot of hope. Like, they picked up plenty of points, which was great.
But they almost trebled their points tally from last season. I know it was an extremely low bar, but they did win five games. I know they still finished bottom, but there was progress there. It's just a bit concerning how they totally tailed off come the end.
I think that was it. That's the key. Like they bet Longford in June, and that was the last win of the season. So the downturn will be obviously a concern, but like if they hold on to players like Kelleher and stuff like that, they'll be.
I know.
Growing it again.
I was quick to point this out when it came out the other day. The PFEI transfer list, the players, they'll often be on that and stay exactly where they are. But to see Kelleher on that list, given that he signed a contract not that long ago, that would be a concern as a Kerry fan if he goes.
I wouldn't pass much remarks on that list. I know people look at it a lot, but I'd rather.
But you'd imagine there will be interest.
Yeah, you know. No, there would be interesting. I'm sure he's top scorer this season. Like, so, like,
second
top scorer. Sorry,
yeah, Dean Abbey was top, but if he goes, yeah, you'd be concerned about them. Our own team, Longford,
not great.
No,
I don't think anybody like the success for the season was not finishing bottom. Yeah, just a lot of poor results at the start of the season, and that kind of just became a team that couldn't be gotten rid of. So. You know, they got out of it during the summer, racked up 6 wins out of 36. Not ideal, but some good performances coming to the end of the season. So, big job for Wayne in the off season.
Treaty?
Started off so well. And it fell to shite, but like, I suppose.
I'd say overall okay, to be honest.
Yeah, relatively okay, yeah.
11 like wins from 36, 11 draws, 14 defeats. With the squad they had, the fact that Curran missed a lot of games, I think 7th is as good as it's probably going to get there for a while. Now, there's talk of maybe them giving a bit of a go now this off-season, so we'll see what kind of activity goes on down there. But I think okay. I think they get harshly viewed on at times. I think people need to remember that this club is very much still in its infancy. This podcast is older than Treaty United.
Oh, there you go. What more do you need to say?
Yeah. What about Cove Ramblers under new owners? Of course, we spoke to Paul Francis recently from FC 32. Be exciting to see what they can do. And I suppose there'll be a lot of speculation and rumours, maybe linking some of those Cork lads that were released. Could we see Jack Doherty go back there? Interesting off-season coming up for Cove, but overall, probably a bit of
a disappointment. Yeah, I think so. I think there was a bit of hope there that they'd sneak into one of them playoff spots. But
then again, when you say we wouldn't have expected much more this season, given the players they lost, given Shane Keegan's swift departure. So just a quiet year, and they'll be hoping, a bit like Longford, that they're a bit more involved next year. Finn Harps.
Bit of a disappointment, like they were in touch and distance and let it go come towards the end of the season. Like, I don't think they won in their last lock, like good luck of games, and they just kind of fell out of it.
I think that's it. If you'd said at the start of the season that they'd finish sixth, you'd probably say, okay, they're probably just going to miss out on the playoffs, but they've made up a lot of ground from last year. But
yeah,
to see the way that they kind of really fell away quite hard in the second half of the season, that will be a
disappointment. Kick to the bollocks, yeah.
We'll go straight to the top now. Cork City, not much to say on this, really. They weren't maybe just as well, they only lost two games as well, the same as Galway last year. So pretty much a similar.
Not as stylish, though, as Galway were last year.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. But look, anyway, they didn't need to be. They're up and they'll be in the Premier Division next season. So good season for them. And I suppose they struggled when they went up last time, and maybe they were too loyal to players that got them there. They've moved on a good bunch of players already. So it looks like they're probably going to be a bit more aggressive in their transfer business, which is probably good to see, despite the fact there's players leaving there that you'd feel a bit sorry for, obviously. What about you, CD?
Just on Cork there, you'd want to be doing a good bit of business in the off-season, considering the pricing of the season ticket.
Why, how much ticket?
Oh, it's gone up a good bit. I think there's a lot of jibber-jabber people.
Didn't see that. There you go.
Yeah.
What about UCD season? Finished second, but...
Oh, yeah. I think they'd be very disappointed. I think they were expecting to be in the playoffs, and they did that, finish second, and then get knocked out. Kind of at a whimper as well
The only thing I will say, I know Ronan Finn spoke about this, that he feels that group will be a lot stronger next year. So,
yeah, well, he's hardly going out on a limb saying that. Like,
and I know he didn't play as many games as maybe.
He was injured. He got injured in the early part of the season and only came back towards the end. So he missed a good chunk of the summer.
Yeah.
But there's some very good players. I think they'll be.
Yeah, I think they'll be there.
Very strong for the title next year.
Wexford, James Keddy has left since we last recorded a pod.
Yeah. What do you make of that?
Suppose I was surprised because we spoke about it on last week's show that, you know, to finish third was a good season, but the way they went out with the playoffs would have been obviously hugely disappointing. And
yeah, I think the fact that they just did nothing in the playoff games was a real downer. Like, I think the expectations at Wexford would have been, we're getting into the playoffs, but we have to do something in the playoffs. They did nothing. And I don't, like, there is a bit of progression there, but I don't think the required amount, to be honest. I can see.
It'll be interesting to see in terms of, I suppose, what type of squad they have next season, because they went for it the last couple of years. They signed players that they probably wouldn't have been able to attract in the past. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see whether that's still the approach or whether it's a change of tack from them. Athlone Town?
Good in parts.
The cruel thing about football, they're probably, you know, 10 or 20 minutes away from this being a very good season.
Yeah. But
the way they capitulated against Bray, that's obviously going to be hard to
terrible,
take. And
terrible.
How they kick on next season, you're always concerned about Athlone, and with the whole uncertainty of things there, it's as likely to fall apart as it is to be built on. You know what I mean?
So yeah, absolutely.
It feels like they've very, very much missed the boat here.
I think so. I think, like, there's going to be probably a bit of a refresh of the squad and stuff like that. So, I think there was a missed opportunity, I think is the best way to put it. To be disappointed that they didn't get to the final, say, next week.
And Bray, look, the obvious answer there, if they win on Sunday, it's an absolutely fantastic season. Even if they don't, they've got to the playoff final. Nobody would have expected that. Despite the fact they only finished fifth in the league, they have been a bit up and down. There's been a bit of drama, I suppose, with Ian Ryan leaving and then Lorcan Fitz leaving. But that's Bray. There's always drama. So, their season really rests on Saturday. So, look, that's a bit of a recap. As I said, there will be full season or club-by-club season reports on the Members Club over the coming weeks. So keep an eye out for that. Let's go to our teams of the year, Gary.
Very good.
We'll start with the First Division. This won't be that exciting because Cork have dominated the division, I suppose, this year. So look, I'll go with my team first and then we'll hear yours. Bradley Wade in goals, only conceded 18, 20 clean sheets. Brilliant record, but of course he's been released since then. At the back, the centre backs are obviously Keane Coleman and Charlie Lyons. I don't think anyone will dispute that. I struggled for the full backs a little bit. I went with Evan McLaughlin at core because he actually got 9 assists. I know he didn't always play left back. He was kind of all over the place in that core team. But yeah, we'll slot him in there. And Jimmy Watson from Harps. I struggled for a right back, to be honest, but I noticed that he played the most minutes of any player in the entire division, and he caught the eye a few times against Longford this season. Scored a great goal against us in the opening game. Seems to have a bit of a long-range shot in the locker, so I'll throw him in there at right back. Midfield, again, it's very Cork heavy. Young Cathal O'Sullivan, for a 17-year-old, to have the impact he did this season was very impressive. 7 goals and 3 assists. Barry Coffey, he was the joint top scorer for Cork alongside Jack Doherty. Doherty probably unlucky to miss out on the team. He just missed too many games with injury. Greg Bulger, we wondered when he went there how many games he'd play this season. He played 33, and every team needs a good 6, don't they? So you have him in there. And then Behan, I know he's more of a central player, but I've just stuck him out on the left wing. I'm just going for the basic 4-4-2 here in all my teams. He's a really good player at UCD. And the front two, the two lads that got all the goals this season, Dean Ebbe and Ryan Kelleher for Kerry.
Yeah, largely, well, a lot of similarities with yourself. Bradley Wade for Cork and goals, Charlie Lyons and Keane Coleman centre-backs. Dean O'Shea at left-back, lad.
I told you, listeners, I told you he'd find a way to put a Longford Town player in the team of the year, the team that finished 9th.
Yeah, well, he was class. And anybody that watched any of the Longford Town games will have spotted that if they know anything about the game. So
he did pop up with, he was Longford's what, probably third top goal scorer this season from left.
Yeah, he was. He was,
he was very good. He was excellent, but yeah, you can't be having a 9th place.
Oh, you can.
Unless he plays Redrada.
Yeah, or scores a load of goals. But he was very good for Longford Town this season.
Right, go on. I'll let you have one.
I copied yourself with Watson. I didn't know who I was going to go for. So I just looked at your team and then picked Watson.
Watson out.
Mikey Raggett out on the right from UCD. Very good for
Wexford, you mean? Oh, sorry, Mikey Raggett. Sorry, I thought you said Mikey Rowe. Sorry.
But yeah, no, deserves to be there. I thought he was very good. Sean Brennan in centre mid, one UCD player of the season, I think, last week.
And you're the president of the Sean Brennan fan club, so that's fair enough.
Yep. Barry Coffey as well, and I thought Teddy for Athlone.
I was going to put, he did cross my mind. He was impressive. I see he's on the PFEI list as well. He's obviously a Rovers player that was on loan at Athlone, so I wouldn't mind.
You might as well be looking into a ditch as that list. Don't worry about that list.
I wouldn't mind seeing him playing for the other Midlands club next season.
Yeah,
if Wayne Groves is listening. Who's your front two?
I'll Kelleher and Ebbe for the score of the goals.
Yeah, and if you have my manager for that team, obviously has to be Tim Clancy. But player of the year, who did you go for in the first division?
I didn't actually pick one, to be quite honest. Who'd you go for?
Just went for Dean Ebbe because scored the most goals. He was very, very destructive this season for Athlone. He was probably unmarkable at times in games.
Yep, fair enough.
Okay. Right, Premier Division. Do you want to go first, Premier Division?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Connor Curls and goals.
Okay.
Right back, Sean Gannon, which would be... I'm surprised you didn't go for him.
Don't be giving away my team.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Redmond and Barrett and Honahan make up the rest of the back four. I don't think there can be too many queries over that. I put Mulroney, Coyle and Watts in the midfield, and Brandon Kavanagh as well.
Never thought I'd see the day you had Dylan Watts in a BTS team of the year.
Yeah, well, look, I'm happy enough to say I was wrong. No, I wasn't wrong. He was shite when I said he was shite. But he's had a fantastic season, really showing up. So yeah, he has to be in it. And also, like, he's continuing to perform this season in Europe as well. So yeah, he does.
God, he almost scored an unbelievable goal the other night against TNS. Did you see the one edge of the box where he just took on the ball and he skipped by a couple of lads?
No, I didn't actually watch that game at all. So no.
There you go.
And then Hoban and Boyd up front.
Right. Okay. I know this will be a tag controversial, as it was when I think the PFAI team was announced, but I've gone with Clark instead of Kearns. Nothing against Kearns, he's had a good season, but I think Clark kept the most clean sheets, and I've spoken about it at times on this pod. He's just asked to be a goalkeeper. It's great to see. He just keeps the ball out of the net. and he keeps everything simple. And when he has the ball in his hands, he kicks it to a fella in a maroon jersey. And that's all I want from my goalkeeper. So Brendan Clark in there for me. Back four, I've gone for Honahan at right back. I know he played more on the actual left side a lot this season, but I just had to slot him in somewhere. I thought he would, any time I've watched him, I didn't realise how good he is. I think he's absolutely sensational.
Yeah.
Paddy Barrett in there for me, that's no one would argue that one. I know there'll probably be complaints about putting Joe Redman in there. He was very poor at the start of the season, became good towards the end. Malloy could have gone in here, but he didn't finish his season out yet, so I can't put him in there. There was a few other players like that could have gone in there, but they didn't play enough games, so Redmond goes in there for me. Tyreek Wilson at left back for me. Into the midfield then, I go with the middle two first, Dylan Watson and Mark Coyle, so again, they picked themselves. The two wingers, I suppose I struggle with this a little bit because I wanted to pick players again that had played an awful lot of games, and Brandon Kavanagh, I didn't actually realise he played pretty much, I think he played every game this season. Now, he was very quiet in the first part of the year, and since Kenny's come in, and I think since Palmer got injured and he's taken on more of a role in that Pats team, he's been sensational. 14 assists, he got the most assists in the league, so the stats there simply put him in there, there's no doubt about it. And then the other one, I'm going to contradict myself in terms of playing a huge amount of games, because I know he only came in the summer, but El Bouzedi has just been a joy to watch since he's come back into the league. And he got 5 assists as well since he came back. So
you're putting him ahead of Mulroney, yeah?
I am.
Okay.
Probably, yeah, I'm probably being a bit hypocritical of myself there. Mulroney's obviously played more games. I don't know how many assists he got compared to El Bouzedi, but I just think El Bouzedi is a class player. Front two, again, I'm probably going against my own rule a little bit here by picking Sean Boyd, but we spoke about it on the pod last week. They don't win the league without Sean Boyd Shells.
Yeah.
So simple as that. And
he
then I went for Padraig Amond.
Yeah, don't dispute that. A great season back for him.
And obviously the Duffer will manage that team. My player of the year, I don't know if this is going to be controversial or not. Usually it goes to an attacking player, someone that's scoring goals, making things happen. But I've been so impressed with Paddy Barrett this year. I'm picking Paddy Barrett as my player of the year.
Yeah, very good. I don't have one either. I didn't pick any. I thought 11 lads there, they did well enough. They can fight amongst themselves for BTS player of the season in the Premier.
There you go. That's the illustrious Between the Stripes player and team of the year award. So well done if you're in there. We know all the players in the league listen to this podcast. I suppose that brings us to all the managers listen as well.
Oh, definitely.
Some of them more than others. let's go to the final BTS hotline of the season. Wang Dang, any chance yourself and Gary would replace Higgins and Hegarty at Derry next season? I don't think we'd have the patience for it, lad.
I'll give it a go.
Simon Canning, how can Derry pick themselves up after this disastrous season? Morale must be in the basement up in the Northwest. Discuss. I suppose we've touched on this a little bit earlier. I think there's going to be a reset by default with the amount of players that are talked about been leaving up there. There's going to have to be a rebuild. So that actually might come at a good time if Rory Higgins is staying. It might be a good thing that so many players out of contract there.
Yeah, it might make a few decisions a lot easier than what they might have been. But yeah, I think there can be no rest at Derry. They need to get moving and moving quick.
And just something else we didn't talk about earlier: the summer signings didn't work at Derry. They brought in lads.
Wisdom.
Don't know if it's fair to call them journeymen, but Wisdom came in. And I actually, he looked to be doing okay in his first couple of games. Now, I wouldn't have seen as much of him as other people. But towards the end of the season, I spoke about when they were beaten in Weavers Park, how it was almost as if Drogheda knew, let's let this lad have the ball and carry it out. And he cost them a goal that night with a terrible back pass. And it was the same thing on Sunday. Anytime he was on the ball, I felt Derry were very vulnerable.
I'm not sure if I'd agree. It does look like, though, that particularly in that game at Weavers Park, as you mentioned, like he was singled out to make a mistake. But I think in one sense, like some of the signings that were brought in, it's just like, oh shit, we need to do something. And I'm not sure they were the best signings of all.
Yeah. Get up, you bowsy. Is the seat kill right around the front perimeter for the FAI Cup final every year absolutely necessary?
No,
it's not necessary. It's the only game it happens for. Despite the fact that there is pretty much a pitch invasion at every Ireland senior international game. There's usually some eager that runs on the pitch, yet there's not seat kills done for that. The rugby the other night, no seat kills. Why are League of Ireland fans treated differently? Even I thought the security outside of the ground the other day was way over the top. I know there's been incidents at recent cup finals, so they have to be on top of things, but I just think there is...
Is a seat situation like that the right way to resolve that?
I think League of Ireland fans are treated differently, and I'm firmly in belief of that. Dwayne Doyle, what player surprised you the most this season? Gary's answer can't be Dylan Watts. Name one player to watch next season from left field. Thanks for your great work with the pod covering the league. Enjoy the rest, lads. Thank you very much, Dwayne. So, player that surprised you the most, Gary, and it can't be Dylan Watts.
Jeez.
Mark Coyle?
I was thinking of between him and Conor Kearns, to be quite honest.
We've been harsh enough on Kearns, I suppose.
Yeah, like, but we've watched him for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
He has never impressed me, but he has upped it this season, and I know the Duff effect has certainly helped in that regard. But I just think he's probably going to be a
Shelburne player you're looking towards, because we've spoken about, well, so many of those players have played way beyond their previous levels this season. So the answer to that question probably is a Shelburne player.
Who would you pick?
I've never been a huge Paddy Barrett fan, and he has been sensational this season.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen a lot of him with Dundalk, and I was like, I don't understand. Like, you hear so many players within the league talking about how good Paddy Barrett is, and I'm like, what are these lads talking about? And can see it this season.
Yeah, that's
sensational. So there you go. One player to watch next season.
Maybe Carlo Sullivan for Cork.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, maybe if he gets a goal, if he gets a chance, like he's 17 or 18. We'll say he's 18 come next season. Will he get an opportunity to, like, you know, he had scored some wonderful goals and was playing some lovely football for Cork, but that was kind of when the pressure was off.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that going to be, like, will he get game time at all when they're maybe down at the wrong end of the table?
Mm.
Time will tell on that. But I think he'd be an interesting one to watch.
Sam, in short, what would the expectation of you and Gaz be for Longford next season? Playoffs? Specific players re-signed, etc. Great work all season, men. Keep it up. Thank you very much, Sam. We don't really know anything about players, so we can't really speak about that. But in terms of expectations, I personally, at this moment in time, again, it's difficult to talk without seeing players or been signed or any announcements like that. But I actually wouldn't expect Longford to challenge for the playoffs. I just think we've too much ground to make up from the last two seasons. I'm kind of happy to make peace with where we are at the minute and just wait to see what happens. Yeah, wait for us to bounce back at some stage in the next few years. But I wouldn't be putting pressure on anyone to, obviously, you know, you have to set targets to try and kick on and be ambitious and all the rest. But if you're asking me right now at this moment in time, as Sam is, do I expect Longford to be in the playoffs next season? My answer at this moment in time would be no.
I wouldn't expect it, to be quite honest. I would, that'd be the reach goal. But I think mixing it around 5th, 6th, 7th.
Like, as you said, there was improved signs towards the end of the season. If Longford can keep some of those players that came in the summer, Daniel Norris, Topku, then yes, you could see that team kicking on a little bit. But if we had a season a bit like Harps, I suppose, where we are up around there and maybe don't just get over the line, then that would be progress, I suppose.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Our friend Git, who's been a great contributor this season, is that the biggest hog-filling season ever from Derry City?
In a way it is, in a way it isn't, because
it's hard to get away from the fourth in a two-horse race narrative.
It is, because it's a fact. It's a very compelling narrative, to be quite honest. They failed on multiple fronts, and that's the most succinct way I can put it.
They didn't even go down in a blaze of glory. They went down with a whimper.
Yeah,
that's absolutely, you know, the worst thing about the whole lot. Chris Wex, fourth in a two-horse race for the title, beaten in the cup final by a part-time team. Does Higgins have any apologists left in Derry now? I think, as we discussed earlier on the pod, it's going to be very difficult, if not next to impossible, for him to get the fans back on side.
As I said, I think it's recoverable. I think he will be there next season. So I think Derry fans will need to start making their peace with that to an extent and see what he does. But as I've said many times in the last few weeks, a football transplant needs to occur.
Kieran Carrick, major reset needed in Derry. Never looked like they were going to win the final, and after a dreadful end of the season, I couldn't see Higgins been there next year. Think they could tempt Crawford from the under-21s?
Well, no, I don't think so. No, not a hope.
Well, they have the money to do it, so that's the only thing you'd say. You know,
I should go and get Mourinho then.
But I mean, Rory Higgins was tempted to leave the Irish setup. Now he's a Derry man, but
but like, if they have, like, if money's no object,
which it isn't.
Yeah, I don't
know. There might have to be a bit of scaling back now that there's no European football next season. Pat Mitchell, can Jamie McGonigal feel aggrieved that been frozen out and moved on from Derry on the basis of the number 9 position being identified as their supposed problem area? They've had the ideal replacement in that position and their problems have persisted or gotten worse. Good question, that, actually, isn't it?
Can you say that again?
Can Jamie McGonigal
feel
aggrieved have been frozen out and moved on from Derry on the basis of the number 9 position being identified as their supposed problem area? They've had the ideal replacement in that position and their problems have persisted or gotten worse.
Derry.
Ah, lad, I know we're near the end of the season. Come on. Jamie McGonigal was Derry's striker last season.
Yeah.
A lot of people said he was the problem, that he wasn't scoring enough goals.
Yeah.
Pat Hooban came in and things didn't get any better.
But he scored 15 goals. What are you talking about? He scored 15 goals. What are you looking for him? What else do you want him to do? Score 50 goals. There was never a chance for that. The maximum goals, the ceiling for goals in the League of Ireland seems to be 15, 16 goals. That no one can get past that. When was the last time someone got more than 20? Pat Hooban probably in what?
Yeah,
22, was it?
28 or something like that. Yeah.
28? 2018?
Yeah. No, he got 28 or 29 goals in 2019, I think it was, yeah.
Was it? Yeah. And I could say, remember there was a lot of talk about Gaffney getting that number?
I think he won it with 9, did he?
Or something stupid. I think it was 12, but like it was something bad, right? I don't think Jamie McGonigal can feel aggrieved at all. I don't think.
Just looking, he scored 5 goals in 24 last season. So Pat Hooban's gone in and he's up there. But I think just
that's what I'm saying. Sorry, and that's why I was listening to you. I was like, what the hell is going on?
I think the point is, though, and we've talked about this, like everyone seemed to think the silver bullet was Pat Hooban's arrival. We were adamant it wasn't going to be that simple. That the formula that we keep talking about, the mentality, the style of play, the playing through the thirds, the Brian Maher must have 5 billion touches a game. That was a bigger problem than who was wearing the number 9 jersey.
No, all of those things are true. But if you look back on some of the chances that were missed before Hooban came along, and you're like, Jesus, something could happen here. And he still scored 15. Like I was saying at the start of the season, he scored 25. Now, I was obviously off the mark there, but I think that was belief in Pat Hooban rather than belief in Derry and the team around him. Like, he was very productive in a team that was very unproductive this season.
Yeah.
So I don't think Pat Hooban, and I definitely don't think Jamie McGonigal, like, what did he score? He scored feck all before he left.
Yeah.
So no. I don't even know why Jamie McGonigal is coming up here.
Billy Dorney, uber disappointing cup final. Underachieving Derry. Other than that, great that we're back up. He's a Cork fan. Delighted Shamrock Rovers were stopped. Duffer's fab. Absolutely great that our league is growing. Fab to see families attending Turner's Cross and loving the occasion. Exciting season. So a bit of a recap there from Billy. But yeah, it's been great. Obviously, the news came out the other day that this is the first season where we've passed over a million spectators at all League of Ireland games combined, which is another great step forward. Lots of clubs getting positive news recently about stadium funding. So I know the league used the phrase "this is our time" the other day on their socials, and let's hope that it really is our time now in the next few years. Declan Crosby, Kevin Doherty deserves huge credit. He's had to build a new team every year. He's made some really smart signings in the window. I thought we were gone the day in Oriel when we lost 4-2, but they've turned it around completely. We simply cannot fill the togs on Saturday now. That's a great point he makes there about the 4-2 game in Oriel, because I spoke to Joanna about that earlier in the interview, as you heard. But I was there that night and I thought, okay, this is a changing of momentum. And Kevin Doherty was getting a bit from the draw. And it's hard to imagine that now. Like, this man's probably on the verge of getting a statue in Drogheda at this stage if he keeps them up on Saturday.
Yeah.
He was getting a bit from the Drogheda fans. I remember sending you a voice note saying Doherty's getting a bit of stick here from the Drogheda fans.
Right.
And online after the game that night, now, again, we always say online, not a good barometer for things. There were people starting to question the manager. The turnaround since then has been remarkable.
Yeah, but I think that was like, they're going to, at the end, in a way, it's kind of like Waterford fans chiming on. What are you looking for?
But they were bottom. I think they might have been bottom that night.
They might have been.
There could have been a good couple of points adrift of Dundalk. So,
but the situation was more dire there. Had the togs ready to go. Mm. Like, that was always going to be the case. Like, it was going to be very hard for any man to pull it out of the fire.
Well, you think back, it's easy to say that now, but John Daly had just come in, there was a few signings coming, you know, there was a bit of a feel-good factor for the first time at Dundalk, but that obviously fell flat very quickly. It's just a point to make, you know, that it's an amazing turnaround from losing your local derby, a relegation 6-pointer, 4-2, really poor performance that night from Drogheda, and you're getting a bit from your fans to where he was on Sunday with the trophy in his hand on the pitch at the Aviva. Declan Crosby also says, it has to be said, the atmosphere at the cup final was incredible. Drogheda is a community club. Had three of the lads visit my school before the cup final. They were amazing with the kids. They give a lot and they got it back today with the support. Europe, here we come. Yeah. I have to say, it was remarkable to see the Drogheda crowd. I know Derry brought a massive crowd as well, but for Drogheda to bring 20,000 fans up the road the other day was absolutely sensational. Never ending, how is Higgins still in a job after the final whistle? Nobody mentioning how... I'm not really sure about that, but anyway, he's hashtag Rennie for Derry, but how is Higgins still in a job was his main point there. I think that's pretty much it for this year, guys, in terms of the hotline.
Great to get it. Sure, look, it's good to have another one in the can.
Yeah, so look, that was the season finale. We will probably be back. I don't want to make too many promises. I know I can tend to do that this time of year, saying, oh, we'll be back with a special pod here and there and everywhere. We might do a Christmas one at some stage. We usually do that every year. So we'll think about a Christmas pod potentially. As I said, there might be a few few mini pods on the members club over the off season. So keep an eye on our socials for that and make sure you sign up. But I suppose this is the time of the podcast where I thank everyone for their support again this year. It's been an amazing league season, Gary, but we were just talking before we started recording. I think this has been one of our most enjoyable podcast seasons as well.
We probably say that at the end of every season that we've been at this crack. But really enjoyed it. It was frustrating at times to see, you know, the title run in just being endlessly, you know, no, you have it, I'll have you have it, you have it, you have it, I don't want it. So it was good to get that resolved in the end. Obviously, it had to be resolved, but just for it to be over was brilliant. But yeah, great season. There's so many highs, some good games, some great numbers on telly and stuff like that as well. Games, we had two games in one day on RTE.
Yeah.
Great to see Drogheda winning the cup and go on to European football next year. Hopefully they do it again and finish off the season well on Saturday. Lots of really good high points throughout the season, which is great to see. So hopefully it continues and people continue to support the league in greater numbers and we can grow on that million spectators come the end, you know, 12 months time.
Yeah, I mean,
hopefully we're all here alive and well.
Yeah,
and enjoying the leagues
and the pod. Yeah, so. I mean, there's so many, even off the pitch this year, obviously no one's taken joy in what's happened at Dundalk, but you think back to the Noel King, and that was the same week Stephen Kenny went to Pats. We had to do the emergency pod that week.
Oh, that was, like,
that was insane that week alone. And then, as you said, Drogheda winning the cup just really caps it all off. Shells winning the league. As I said, Stephen Kenny coming back to the league. It's been absolutely tremendous. So we've really enjoyed bringing the show to you each and every week. It's been great to see the engagement we've had as well from the listeners this year. I know the hotline's been a new feature that's been very popular at the Predictions League, the way we've revamped that as well. I know people have really enjoyed that. So there'll be plenty more of that next season. We'll try and have a few other tweaks just to keep things fresh, which is important. Just like any good squad, you need to keep things fresh. So look, to all of the listeners that tuned in this year, huge thanks. It was amazing as well. As Cup Final Sunday, and the amount of people I bumped into at the game that were fans of the podcast and were delighted to chat was just so so warm, and it was brilliant. I actually got sitting next to a couple of Drogheda fans that were big pod fans, and the lady that I was chatting to actually ran off without the handbag, so I had to go chasing after her, but luckily got it back to her, otherwise I would have been having to make an appeal on the pod here about the handbag. But yeah, the power of the pod, there you go. But no, to all of our listeners, it's been fantastic this season. Make sure you're with us again next season. We'll be back for season 9. Hard to believe that we're heading towards 10 years. We'll soon be getting a testimonial. Huge thanks to Anthony Quinn and Quinn AV. It's been a great year for the women's team up in Athlone. The men's team, they were almost there, but they'll be set to go again, I'm sure, with Anthony cheering them on. But he's been a huge supporter of ours over the last couple of seasons. So huge thanks to Anthony Quinn and quinnav.ie for their support of the pod this season. Thanks to all of the guests we've had on as well. And to Gary, I have to give Gary my thanks too, because there's some nights here where up till 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning recording this, and he never complains. He always turns up and gets it done. So thank you very much, guys.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks yourself for putting up my own shite. But yeah, looking forward to next season already.
Sure, see you Sunday, Wembley.
Yeah, please God.
We'll have a bit more moaning to do there about hype jerseys and
don't mention any of that. Just move on. We'll see. Be sure to say hello if anybody sees us over in Wembley. Hopefully good result on Thursday as well. Actually, we could do it winning on Thursday, obviously against Finland. But hopefully a nice 1-0 win on Sunday would be nice in Wembley to round off the year.
Yeah, most definitely. Look, that has been Series A of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It has been a tremendous year for the League of Ireland. Thanks so much for joining us throughout the year. We'll see you again in 2025.
Thanks for listening. Check out betweenthestripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.